south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, important announcement before we get started here. I get emails all the time, and I mean all the time, that say, Johnny, I'd love to come to your Expat Insider Seminar, but I just can't swing it now. I don't have the money. I'm strapped. Some say they've got the money or can possibly swing it, but they can't get the time off. The boss or the wife, often one and the same, won't give it to them. And I know by checking things out myself up in the first world, I got family up there, that times are tough and most just grin and bear it. And that's all the more reason to get your Plan B started right away. But how do you even get started if you can't get boots on the ground? Yep, you know the clock is ticking. Where's the good news up in the States? You hear any lately? I'll tell you what I hear. A lot of sad stories and a lot of very disturbing facts and figures coming from old vomit land. I know what's happening to most people who live up there. It's happening to my own family. After a while, you just get used to bad news and become numb to it. Has that happened to you yet? Are you hardened to the news? If all that disappointment still upsets you, then I bet you're getting your Plan B in motion or at least thinking about it. If you can swing it, right? Let's face it, if it wasn't for guys like me with shows and people in the blogosphere with a lot of boots on the ground, how would you even know how much a Plan B will cost you or the proper steps to go through in the right order? And you know, guys who I admire like Doug Casey have been telling people to leave the States for years. He's been saying, get your ass and assets out if you know what's good for you. Or in the end, you'll have neither. But he and everyone else singing that tune really don't give you a step-by-step plan on exactly how to do it. It's like saying, hey, you just bought a new car. Now you need to protect it. You need a garage. Go build one. Here's how you do it. You go to the lumber yard, order some supplies, and start building. And you better hurry up because winter's coming and the car will be ruined. Anyway, like I said, the average American has become immune to bad news. So what if actually coming down and getting boots on the ground is out of the question for you, at least right now? Should you just give up and go down the tubes with the rest of the sheep? Even if you're kicking and screaming when your parachute doesn't open, will that make you feel better? So anyway, even if you're numb to the bad news, once in a while you hear some statistical information that really sinks in. Takes a while to get it out of your head. For example, according to 2016 figures, fully 30% of the people who shop at Walmart in the States do it using food stamps. Does that scare you? Does that make you want to start thinking about getting that Plan B going? It should. By the way, Walmart is the biggest employer in Latin America. They've got over 3,000 stores now. And how many people shop Walmart with food stamps down here? Exactly none. Zero. However, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if I read tomorrow that Walmarts in Mexico are accepting food stamps. You know, they say California is the bellwether for the United States. Mexico is the bellwether for the rest of Latin America. So anyway, if I read that news tomorrow, it would be the limit. We are living in a bizarro world, you know, but it wouldn't surprise me. Now, I don't actually like Walmart, Costco, or any of the big box stores, but I'm just laying out the sad facts here. So as it turns out, Walmart is food stamp central for the U.S., but that's only part of the story. Meanwhile, there are signs posted in the employee break room of every U.S. Walmart instructing employees on how they, too, can qualify for food stamps. And guess what? Over 90% of Walmart's employees do qualify. Is there not something terribly wrong here? And how about this? Last year, 2015, the U.S. spent about $80 billion on food stamps, officially known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. That money goes to around 50-plus million Americans. Okay, you probably knew that already, but last year, 2015, Walmart took in around $20 billion of that food stamp money, meaning a quarter or 25% of all Walmart's income is from government taxpayer money, the food stamp program. So, big deal, you might say. Sounds like a hell of a lot, but so what? Now, Walmart's profit margin on sales is 3.12%. Now, follow me here. With their total U.S. store annual revenue of around $115 billion, that would mean last year their U.S. stores had a profit of $3.6 billion. Meanwhile, $20 billion of their income comes from food stamps, right? So you can conclude that if Walmart did not have that food stamp money, they would be dead in the water. And when asked to explain those numbers, a high-level Walmart official said, "Why do you think we're closing stores down in the States and opening them in Latin America?" He admitted all their growth projections come from outside the U.S. Again, something's very rotten in Denmark. Which begs the question, why are things always rotten in Denmark? Now, I remember way back when, back in the 70s, when my middle-class parents were discussing how they saw a poor soul at the local grocery store paying for his food with food stamps. Back then, it was such an indignity. Like divorce, back then it was kind of a scarlet letter. I remember my dad saying if he was ever reduced to accepting food stamps, he'd shop on Monday mornings, the slowest food shopping day of the week, where no one would recognize him. Now, I'm from Chicago, and that traditionally was a big union town, lots of factories and stuff. And once in a while, there'd be a big strike and people out for a long time, and they'd have to resort to food stamps. Sure, a momentary blow to the ego, but everyone knew it was temporary. After the strike was over, so were the food stamps. Of course, back then, they didn't call it welfare or food stamps. They called it relief. I remember my dad saying, "Yeah, so-and-so's on relief. What a shame." Which brings us back to middle-class America today. Which, if you looked at statistics and present value of money and income, etc., these are the working-class people who are losing ground by the minute. They're the victims of the government-imposed downward spiral. And yes, the intelligent ones, the ones that have been paying attention to alternative media, they know their lifestyle is fading away, but they also know there's a really great life and a nice future ahead if they only voted with their feet. But most of these guys and gals are loaded down with debt. So I thought to myself, what can I do to help the many astute middle class and other expat gonna-bes and wannabes who just can't, right now anyway, get their own boots on the ground here in Latin America, the ones who just can't swing coming down to one of my expat boots on the ground insider seminar. And if they could come down and explore on their own, they just wouldn't have the necessary info and connections to make a smooth and efficient transition. No sense coming down on your own and making the same expensive mistakes that so many of us gringos and expats did when we first came down. Well, anyway, that's a dilemma. So, after much thought and procrastination, I'm really good at that, and knowing there's not much time left to get that plan B going if you haven't started a thing yet, I sat down with my good buddy Expat Eddie and an umbrella drink or two, and I created a new online video course called The New Expat Essentials. So, what's it about? Well, I can tell you it's 35 videos and almost 9 hours of content. Bottom line, if you like listening to this show, you're going to love my new Expat Essentials Plan B course. In each module, I go deep into the details on how to live, work, play, retire, and or do business. And for those of you thinking of coming to my seminar, the new Expat Essentials is a perfect primer for what you'll be able to see with your own two eyes once you get down here. So in these 7 modules, I'll cover things I just simply can't talk about on the show and the kind of detail certain important subjects really need. It's the kind of inside information that's the next best thing to come into my live seminar. I know why you're listening to this program. You're serious about understanding your options and getting out of Dodge as soon as you can. But first, it all starts with a plan, right? Which is why you should go to www.expatplanb.com to check out my new Expat Essentials program. That's www.expatplanb.com. All one word. You know, I've been thinking about this a long time. I wanted to give everyone an opportunity to move along in their plan B, whether they've got one going yet and have arranged a few things, or they're just thinking about it and haven't started yet at all. You longtime listeners to this show know that you need some essential information to get that plan jump-started, to get on to the next move and the next phase in your life. And of course, it's priced within anyone's budget. Now, to get you started, I've included 3 free videos. That way, you'll see exactly what you're getting in the new Expat Essentials course. All you have to do, again, is visit www.expatplanb.com, and you'll get those 3 free videos. Now, what a lot of people don't know, even you longtime listeners, is that I've done over 590 The Expat Files Living in Latin America shows. And you know, people are always asking, are you ever going to run out of topics, Johnny? Nope. If I live to 100, it's never going to happen. Because, you know, for expats, living in Latin America is an ongoing adventure and a work in progress. There'll always be more stories to tell and lessons to be learned. That said, I can say with 100% confidence that the new Expat Essentials program is the best source of boots-on-the-ground expat information available anywhere today. There's absolutely no one out there in the expat world that has anywhere near the experience and the info I have accumulated in my over two decades down here. What people don't know is that I've had the longest continuously running podcast and radio show on the subject of expats in Latin America. I've been doing 2 half-hour shows a week for nearly 6 continuous years now. No one even comes close to that. Not to mention I built 13 homes in small offices in 4 different Latin countries. So is 13 an unlucky number? Well, not for me. My unlucky numbers were Project 1 and 2. That's where I made my mistakes and I learned my lessons. And that's the kind of information I pass on to you listeners, right? That said, I'll continue with this show as long as I can. However, what I can't guarantee is how long a voice like mine will be around to give it to you. You know, your Uncle Sam wants to keep his cows on the farm, right? And when they start wandering around, he puts them back in the barn and puts a big lock on the door. And that's what's happening right now. And if you don't believe that or think I'm exaggerating, just come on down and try to get a Latin temporary or permanent residency started on your own. Even if you're 100% fluent in Spanish, you'll jump through a lot of hoops and run into a few roadblocks that weren't there a few years ago or even just a few months ago. And how do you think that happened? Well, it was your own Uncle Sam. Yep, the long arm of Big Brother strikes again. Sure, you can still put together your plan B, but you better hurry. Which is why you just have to check out www.expatplanb.com. Okay, now let's get on with the show. I mentioned Walmart recently and how they're the biggest employer in Latin America now. And if you remember, in the last couple shows, I mentioned a few things about franchises coming down here to Latin America too. And how in the vast majority of cases, they just clean up. For a couple of very good reasons too. First of all, most franchises are labor intensive. In the U.S., many franchises' labor costs make up over 50% of their overhead. Whereas down here in Latin America, labor costs are often 1/6 as much as they are up in the States. On top of that, rents in Latin America can be 50% or even less than comparable locations up in the States. And then there's that all-important gringo advantage, which simply can't be quantified. All right, that said, do you want to know what the latest and greatest franchise opportunity that's come down from the States here to Latin America? And again, they're just cleaning up. You'll never guess, but would you believe dollar stores? Yep, they're popping up everywhere. You know, it's all 100% El Cheapo stuff from China, but these things are showing up everywhere. They're even functioning as anchor stores in malls, where in the past, at least in the States, there would be a higher level, sort of prestige store that served as the anchor. Macy's, Lord & Taylor, Kohl's, Marshall Field's, even Home Depot, Walmart, Costco, Sam's Club, or Sears. But dollar stores? Come on. Bottom line, if you don't believe in the gringo advantage, try figuring that one out. Now, I know 5 or so years ago, dollar stores started popping up in Mexico and were pretty popular, but they never made it south until about a year and a half ago. Now, they seem to be everywhere. I should mention that over the years, Latins have had their own bad copies of American so-called 99-cent stores. In fact, there's a Latin chain of franchises called El Mismo Precio, which means the same price, and that's the basic dollar store concept too, but they're not first-world franchises and are bush league compared to dollar store franchises. Again, it's all about the competition. You don't want to have gringo competition. You want to have Latin competition because you'll wipe the floor with them. And that's what dollar store is doing. Believe it or not, in some neighborhoods, you see all kinds of upscale Latin women shopping there. Sometimes even bodyguards outside the door. And bulletproof SUVs in the parking lot. The same kind of thing that first made me laugh my butt off when the IHOP came down here. Bodyguards in bulletproof SUVs at an IHOP parking lot? Man, it's like something from the bizarro world. Well, that's Latin America and the gringo advantage again. By the way, expat Eddie says the dollar store has the best inadvertent marketing plan he's ever seen. Since every Latin knows the U.S. uses dollars, and since dollars are infinitely preferable to their own Latin funny money, just the name in itself is its own powerful marketing plan. Talk about unintended consequences, huh? So anyway, I was looking at the dollar store franchise site, and I found out by U.S. standards, to open up one of these things is very inexpensive. For example, for a 1,000-square-foot dollar store, you get a complete turnkey business that's fully stocked and ready to open for, get this, $63,000. Now, I'd say in the past 6 months or a year, I run across maybe 10 or 15 dollar stores, mostly in Central America, and they're around 2,000 square feet. And again, I'm looking at their website, and it says for a 2,000 square foot, fully stocked, turnkey dollar store business, $95,900. Now, that's a lot of dough to a Latin, but not much to us. Then who owns these things? Not your average Latin or even upper middle class Latin, but the entitled children of the rich. You see, when these kids graduate from their helicopter schools and universities, when they get out, they have to have something to do. Many times, mommy and dad will say, pick a business, we'll pay for it. So that's how it often works. If your rich daddy doesn't have a place for you in his business, or perhaps he recognizes his own entitled kid as a lazy ass doofus who just might destroy generations of the family business, instead, to maneuver his pinhead kid into a position where he could do the least amount of harm, he'll say to his kid, go ahead, pick a business, I'll fund it. And what could be better than a U.S. franchise? You just pay the dough, and they set the whole thing up by the numbers for you. Nothing for your dullard, entitled mind to fret over or screw up. In fact, the key would be to hire a go-getter, hungry, middle-class college graduate to run the place. That way, the entitled rich kid and his bodyguards could stop in for 20 or 30 minutes a day, just for the kid to strut his stuff a bit and let everyone know who's in charge. And most of the time, that's how it happens. So, if you're wondering who owns all the Burger King's, McDonald's, Wendy's, Papa John's, IHOP's, and dollar stores, well, it's generally not the entrepreneurial Latin who scraped his savings together and borrowed some dough from the relatives. You'll find they're generally owned by families who are filthy rich to begin with. So then it's logical to ask how they know about those franchises in the first place. Well, it's wealthy Latins that go back and forth on shopping trips to Miami a couple times a year. So they were the first ones exposed to successful first world franchises that hadn't made it down to Latin America yet, and either saw the niche opportunity or it was hit and miss. Though, like I said, they rarely miss. By the way, all the big, well-known ones from up in the States are here already, but there's room for so many more. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm no big fan of franchises. They generally cater to mediocrity. But on the other hand, more than half the gringos and expats that come down are looking for something to do or possibly need to have a job or some kind of income. So who am I to discourage or stand in the way of that? The fact is, if you've got your eye on a franchise that hasn't made it down here yet, it can be a shoo-in, provided the product or service you're selling is within the range of the average Latin. Down here, it seems to be a lot easier to make a lot of money from many people with nickels and dimes and quarters than the high income bracket niche where you're counting on hundreds or even thousands of dollars at one crack. Unless, of course, you plan on marketing to gringos who have a lot more money than the average Latin, that's for sure. Yes, I've seen a few franchises fail, but it's usually with an expensive niche, high-end market item. The key to franchising here in Latin America is to have a product that the common man can afford. And that he can afford over and over again, too. As one European expat friend of mine told me, a guy who's got a franchise called El Macaron, it's an Italian food franchise. By the way, El Macaron means the macaroni. By the way, that was he and his sister's own little hole-in-the-wall restaurant concept more than 25 years ago, and now they've got over 35 low-budget, sit-down little Italian restaurants for the common people. And nearly all of them are in middle-class neighborhoods. No high-end stuff for him. You know, I remember words of wisdom he told me over 10 years ago. He said, if you have a nice, clean, first-world-looking place and the items on your menu are $5 and under, you practically can't miss. Oh, and I remember another pearl of wisdom. He said, never have too much junk on your menu. Make it small. Then you'll have just a few selections, but you'll be very good at it. Enough said about that. Okay, I promised to do part two of shipping things down to Latin America, didn't I? Well, this will be part two then. Just one more thing. Last time I mentioned ordering from Amazon, eBay, and Alibaba, which seems to be the second most popular site for ordering on the internet. Now, funny enough, I received a couple of emails from people saying they would never order anything from Alibaba because it's owned and operated by Muslims and Middle Easterners. Well, that's completely wrong. It's owned and operated by a Chinese consortium. Though I have to concede that in this day and age, Alibaba perhaps was a poor choice for a name. So it's all about things being shipped in from China. Isn't everything these days? And if you're not okay with that and you want to be a Buy USA purist, you'll have a very short list to choose from. But note, Alibaba has things you just can't get on Amazon or the other site. Now, the good thing about Alibaba is you actually get to talk to a real-life personal product representative. Either chat, Skype, whatever. Last time I ordered from Alibaba, the lady's name was Fiona. She was from mainland China, and her English was, well, less than perfect, but I understood her fine when doing the chat. Oh, and by the way, this will make you laugh. When you're contacted by a rep from Alibaba, you'll see a photo up there, you know, a selfie or something. And Fiona was a very beautiful, delicate young Chinese lady. I'd rate her a 9 out of a 10. And during that chat, I said, is that really your picture? And she said, no, I'm not quite so beautiful. So I guess little white lies, Photoshop, and cosmetic surgery cross all international barriers these days. Anyway, when shipping things down to Latin America, the question always comes up, what if you have to return an item? Then I'm sure you're thinking, well, I'm in hot soup. How are you going to get it back to the manufacturer or even back to the States without paying all kinds of fees and duties and going through customs the other way around too? Well, let me tell you a little story. About a year ago, I ordered a piece of electronic gear, had it shipped down quite inexpensively through the channels I mentioned on the last show. Yes, by all means, do check out my last show. A lot of tips and helpful hints about shipping things down. So I bought this piece of electronic equipment in the States, had it shipped down. It's called an NVR. Had it in Latin America for a couple of months, needed to send it back for a warranty repair, and found out, by hook and crook, that I'd be much better off having someone who was returning to the States take it on the plane, carry it back for me, and drop it off the nearest UPS office where he landed, and that was in Miami. Note, it's almost always much more expensive to send something from a Latin American country to the States than vice versa. All right, back to the story now. And then after the company repaired it, I had them send it to the Miami freight forwarding office of one of those Latin shipping companies I mentioned in detail on the last show. Okay, now here's the big tip that'll save you on taxes. I told the company that did the repair to write on the packing slip invoice that it was a warranty repair at no charge. And that was no fib, it's exactly what they did. Then when the package lands in Latin America and goes to the aduana, that's customs, there's no charge. However, if you don't have that stated as a factory warranty repair, then you'll pay import taxes based on the arbitrary assessed value at the aduana. So do let your shipping company know it's a warranty repair ahead of time so they're ready for it. Now, you might wonder if at any time your stuff will ever get stuck in the aduana and you'll have to deal with those lugheads who can't speak a lick of English and really want to sock it to a gringo. Well, yes, your stuff will get stuck in the aduana, that is immigration if you're sending a container down or a car, or if you're having a package shipped straight through from a company like Amazon or eBay or Alibaba. Again, on the last show, I went through some detail on how to do that through one of these Latin freight forwarding services that has a Miami office. Now, if someone sends something down to you by U.S. mail and it's bigger than a card or a letter, it just might get stuck in customs too. And you know, the U.S. mail sends packages by priority and registered mail. And if you pay a little extra for those services, they will get to their destination. In fact, you can track them on the internet. But if the package has any weight to it or is any bigger than a small Kleenex box, it'll usually end up in customs and you'll pay some extra fees. And you or someone else, if you don't speak Spanish, will have to go down and retrieve it. Not all that easy sometimes. Which is why you're almost always better off using a Miami freight forwarding service that has an intermediary office in Miami. They're the ones that do all the dealing with customs and you just pick it up at their office or they'll deliver it to your house or your lawyer's office, your choice. However, for big stuff that you're shipping down, like for example a car or a container, you and your custom broker will have to go down to the aduana and identify it, pick it up, and pay the fees. You'll also have a very limited time, usually a couple of days, to get it off the customs loading dock, or they'll charge you extra storage fees, so be aware of that. And by the way, right outside the aduana, they always have fletes. Those are private guys with moving trucks. Very reasonable, and they'll load your stuff up at the aduana dock and take it to wherever you want it dropped. Now, for larger things like containers and cars, etc., you will want to hire a local customs broker. He'll do all the paperwork on the front and back end, and you'll have to pay him a fee, of course. But if you don't try to do all that stuff yourself, there are endless snags and screw-ups you can get yourself into. So then, how do you find a customs broker? Just give your lawyer a call, and he'll give you a list. In fact, he just might have the names of one or two services that he's used successfully for other clients of his. And by the way, it's not a bad idea to let him help you do the deal so you don't get nailed for gringo prices. Or you can hire the equivalent of what I call an expat concierge lady to do all the legwork way ahead of time and set it all up for you too. Of course, you'll have to pay her a fee to do that, but remember, she's an educated Latin and she'll know the ins and outs of the process and won't be nailed for gringo prices either. Now, the question has come up. Suppose you want to send a snail mail letter or even a small package in the other direction, north, to the United States, Canada, whatever, using the Latin government snail mail service. They all have one, you know. Well, chances are it will arrive fine up in Cleveland, probably a couple weeks after you send it. However, you can't always be 100% sure of that. Now, it's true. A few Latin American government mail services have been privatized and are now owned and operated by the Canadian Postal Service. And those services, I say, are about 98% reliable. But again, I've heard cases where mail has been lost. So what can you do besides let someone that you know who's flying back to the States take your mail back for you and stick it in a U.S. mailbox once they land in Miami, Tucson, or Chicago? Well, you see, there is a very good solution to that. You can go into any one of these internet ordering companies and freight forwarding offices, hand them your mail in for about $2 for a regular letter and more, depending on size and weight. They'll fly it to Miami, drop it in a U.S. mailbox with the proper postage, and after that, it's at the mercy of the U.S. mail service. That said, if you're having valuable stuff shipped from the States to your Latin country or from your Latin country to the States, you'll want to use a courier service like DHL, FedEx, or UPS, and there are some Latin international courier services too that are 100% dependable. But do note, if you have even a letter-sized UPS or FedEx document package, it'll cost you $50 to $100 to have it shipped either way. So again, use your local Latin government mail at your own risk. However, it's very, very cheap. So again, you get what you pay for. Oh, and one last thing. Anything you're shipping down to South America will, in most cases, cost you twice as much or more than shipping your stuff to Central America. It's not only about the logistics. It's about the very high import tax rates in the four main countries in South America. That would be Colombia, Chile, Argentina, and Brazil. Though, like I said, all Latins engage in that very lively and fun game called tax evasion. So, don't be surprised if you're using a customs broker and you're bringing in a container or a car that you're asked by him to grease a few palms along the way, under the pretext, of course, of lowering your tax bill. That's sort of par for the course down here. Anyway, we're getting towards the end of the show now, so don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2017 seminar link, and do get on board. Like I've been saying over and over, you got to get that plan B in motion. Oh, and one word of warning. If you're getting emails from a site I was formerly associated with, Expat Wisdom, anything coming from them or a Robert or a Sandra is not at all sanctioned by me. I've got nothing to do with that site, so don't be fooled again. And finally, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Do subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.